I'm Dean Jackson. He's Joe Polish. And this is the I Love Marketing Podcast.
One of the very best things that I feel we could do for you here at Genius Network is to expand, change, or obliterate the way that you look at things. And I've always loved the saying, be willing to destroy anything in your life that's not excellent. And our next presenter is a real dear friend of mine. He's going to change your worldview. You're going to see things much differently after you have an opportunity to hear him talk. So, let me give you the official introduction of him, done in a proper way. The Wright brothers brought the world the ability to fly. Charles Lindbergh pioneered flying across an ocean. Dr. Wernher von Braun's rockets let man land on the moon. The next presenter, Dr. Peter Diamandis, is the man who brought entrepreneurship to space travel. He created the XPRIZE, making the impossible possible, and offered a $10 million prize in 2004 for the first commercial space flight. Yet, Peter's great gift is how he gets people and organizations to think and then act boldly, and when they do, abundance is created. His personal awards are too abundant to even list, so here's what you need to know about his message. His personal motto is, the best way to predict the future is to create it yourself. Peter just spent several days with 50 of the top thinkers, business people in the world, including Larry Page and Elon Musk, and he's probably going to share some of the insights with that, along with many other things. So get set, because Peter is awesome, the one and only, a bold and abundant mindset. Please welcome my dear friend, Peter Diamandis. Oh, I'll get it.
Joe. Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
You guys hear me okay? Good morning, everybody. It is truly a pleasure to be here with family, and I really view all of you as family, a family of individuals taking action in the world, right? One of the things that I realize is we don't have enough people taking action in the world. And I think that difference between someone who says, I'm going to sit back and let it go by, and someone who says, no, I don't like the way it is huge. We're now living in a time where the ability we have to actually stop complaining about problems and solving problems is extraordinary. I think about the fact that hundreds of thousands, you know, thousands of years ago, if you wanted to solve a problem on a global scale or on a national scale, you had to be the king or queen of a country to have an impact. Hundreds of years ago, you'd have to be the head of state or a robber baron or an industrialist to have an impact. Today, all of us can have an impact. The difference between having an impact and not having impact is a decision. It's not resources, it's not money, it's all there, it's a decision. So I want to talk a little bit about mindset today, about thinking, about how we think, because ultimately it's the most critical thing. What distinguishes us as humans from every other animal, what distinguishes one human from another, is how we think. And I want to encourage you to think in what I call a bold and abundant mindset. Because how you think matters, and it changes everything, in your business, in your life, everything. So I'm going to begin by a tribute to Joe, because my life changed extraordinarily when I met Joe. He's someone who is such an extraordinary giver, a man who is like, what can I do for you, what can I do for you, what can I do for you, right? And you know Joe is to love Joe, and Joe introduced me to Dan Sullivan and Babs, which was a great gift as well, who's become a new mentor and friend. So I wrote this book, Abundance. It was great. We hit number one on New York Times, on Amazon, number two in New York Times, got close. Folks like Mike Klein jumped in, and the whole superhero community here in 25K, where I'm a proud member, really helped drive this on the New York Times list for 9 weeks, and I'm so grateful for that. And again, the thing that I realize is that most of humanity is so mired in the muck that comes to them over the television and the newspaper and the radio, what I call the crisis news network. Right? Every time I walk by CNN in my office, it's some calamity on the planet going on that is fed to you in high definition over and over again. And if you listen to the news and you read the newspapers and you read, you know, watch television, their mission in life is to capture your attention. And every murder, every problem on the planet is fed to you over and over again in high definition. I mean, how can you possibly have a positive mindset watching the news? And I think if you know my work, the realization is that it's not the way the world really is. In fact, the world has gone under tremendous transformation over the last 100 years, driven by technology, which is itself exploding onto the scene. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So, Abundance was a book about where we're going to be in 20 or 30 years. I'm very proud, you know, it was such a success, again, with the help of this incredible community, that my publisher, Simon & Schuster, quadrupled the advance and said, let's do the next one. And Bold, I don't have a cover yet, but Bold is about how to get there. Bold is what I'm going to be speaking about here. It's been co-authored with my good buddy Stephen Kotler, but it's the how-to manual. How do we create a world of abundance? Because the realization is that the world's biggest problems are the world's biggest business opportunities, right? The best way to become a billionaire is help a billion people. Just think about that. And my goal here is to have you think big. Help you think boldly. So to get us in the right mindset, let me share some data. Re-releasing Abundance in September. You can see this is the paperback edition, but there's that Starburst with new evidence of abundance. And I have an amazing team from my Abundance 360 community. And guys, raise your hand in the back here, and Marissa over here. And they did a bunch of research of what's the data showing us. And I want to just give you some of the data. So let's talk about where we're going in abundance. So the first is increase in freedom and happiness. So this is, in fact, the look at slavery and indenturedness over the world from 1750, or three quarters of the world was indentured or in slavitude, if you would, down to under 10% today. This is annual hours worked per person. So even as the rate of our status of living has increased massively, the number of hours that we've had to work for that standard of living have plummeted. And of course, on this graph, you can see that France is where you work the least. This is percentage of degrees awarded to women has been skyrocketing. And I love this graph. It is a correlation, a direct correlation between happiness and access to technology. And guess what's happening in terms of access to technology? It's exploding around the world. If we look at reduction of violence and increase in safety, I mean, CNN would have you believe that there's constantly we're a world under siege, that your life is about to end. But the fact of the matter is, and this comes from the work of Steven Pinker, we're living during the most peaceful time ever in human history. Your chance of dying a violent death are 1/500th of what they used to be. So you can see just the radical fall off in war around the world. Yes, World War II and World War II are peaks here. But at the same time, look at what's been happening over the last 20 years in terms of regional and local wars. If you look at safety, automobile and airline, just plummeting in terms of fatality rates. Increasing health, I love this. Maternal mortality for the mothers in the room here. It used to be a risky business to have a baby. Today, it's dropped off to near zero. At the same time, infant mortality. Imagine having your children die. Today, the ability to guarantee that your children can get through childbirth and live to age 5 or older. And on the flip side, the extended healthy human lifespan. We more than doubled the human lifespan in the last 100 years. And I'll be talking about how we double it again very shortly. On the energy front, electrification and the cost of energy has dropped and plummeted. Solar costs are plummeting. At the same time that the production of solar is going through the roof, I was having drinks with Elon talking about from Solar Cities what the prediction is, 50% solar in the U.S. within the next 15 to 20 years. and the rest of the sunnier parts of the world catching up very quickly thereafter. Reducing poverty, and I love this. This is the cover of The Economist magazine, that we really are heading towards the end of poverty on this planet, at least extreme poverty. Finally, what's making this all possible is technology. And look at these numbers. This is bandwidth costs for a gigabit. $1,200 down to $23 over the last, 15 years. This is the cost per a million transistors. It used to be $222 down to 6 cents. This is the cost of storage for a gigabyte. $600 down to 3 cents. This is happening right now. And if you want to know why your businesses are exploding and what's going on, the reach you have around the world, here's the data. This is what's happening. And then finally, I love this one, which all of us are the beneficiaries of. In 2000, if you wanted to start a tech startup, the average startup cost was $5 million. Today, it's $5,000. 1,000 times cheaper. Talk about an explosion of entrepreneurship. So what's going on the scene here is that we remain unchanged as humans. We haven't had a software upgrade in 50,000 years. We're the red line here, that linear and local thinker that evolved on the savannas of Africa. That yellow line, that exponential growth, and exponential is simple doubling, right? 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. That's exploding on the scene is the technology that we are creating and using. And the difference between those is either disruptive stress or disruptive opportunity, depending on your point of view. If you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and one of you guys come up with a disruptive innovation, it's disruptive stress. If you're the, the kid in the garage who comes up with the innovation, it's disruptive opportunity. And what we're going to be seeing over this next decade, and we're living at the knee of the curve, this is like the most important time and exciting time ever to be alive. Science fiction is becoming science reality every single day. Is that in the next 10 years, 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies are going to be gone, put out of business by companies we haven't heard of yet. At the same time, to echo that, this was from Richard Foster at Yale. If you started a company in the 1920s, you had a 67-year run rate that you could milk the company before you were disrupted. Today, the average is 15 years. The rate of disruption is increasing at an extraordinary pace. I love this, and it's happening every day, and we report on it. We go from I've got an idea to I run a billion-dollar company in record time. Right? Literally, we're seeing billion-dollar startups in 18 months. And here's just, a short list of some of them that we read about, play with, know about. And it's possible, right? You can go from I've got this great idea and scale to a billion-dollar valuation in a year's time, 2 years' time. It's not easy. Maybe you have to be lucky, but it is now possible like never before. All of that's being driven by computational power. All of this exponential change I speak about is being driven by the fact that computers are getting faster and faster and faster, that 9 years from now, the average $1,000 computer that you go out and buy is going to have the computational power of the human mind. And then 25 years later, it's got the computational power of the entire human race. And what's happening that's so extraordinary is we're living into this world of convergence. This is where I spend my life. I spend my life running the XPRIZE, Singularity University, Abundance 360, looking at and feeling the pulse of this convergence, where all of these faster and faster computers are driving a slew of different technologies. What do you mean by that? I mean pervasive networks. Connected everywhere, ubiquitous sensors, a trillion sensor economy, where you're going to be able to know anything you want, anytime you want. Anything you want can be measured. Artificial intelligence, which is going to rock our world like you've never imagined. Robotics, 3D printing, synthetic biology, and medicine. And so faster computers is sort of the growth medium that all of this stuff is happening in. And all of this stuff is technology that if you're not using it yet, you will be. Guarantee. You will be touching and using all of these technologies within the next 5 years. Do you remember the first time that you guys remember seeing email or hearing about email or a web page? It was like this foreign thing. I remember, you know, the first, like, what's this AOL thing I keep hearing about, or this web page thing I keep hearing about? And now, you know, it's second nature. We're using it all the time. You're going to feel that way about these technologies soon enough. And you have to be able to have the impact scale that you want on this planet. And part of my mission, part of my ethos is helping people understand how to use this, how to gain access to it, and how to use it to try and solve bigger and bigger problems, creating wealth, but also creating a world of abundance in the process, because those two are so correlated. So I want to give you just a fall back a little bit on some of the lessons here to give you an understanding. So what's driving all of this convergence and this explosion of technology is what is called Moore's Law. You may have heard of it. This is the guy it's named after, Gordon Moore, who's one of the founders of Intel. And while he was at Intel, he noticed that the number of integrated circuits he could put on a chip was doubling every 12 to 24 months. And so he wrote this paper in 1965 after just 7 years of seeing these doublings, predicting this was going to continue. And in this paper, he said, the IC chip price performance doubles every 18 to 24 months and is expected to for the near future. And that projection is held true for 50 years. And every time we hit a boundary condition of, you know, what kind of particular manufacturing processes, we break through that boundary condition. So what does that look like? So this is the first integrated circuit ever built. In 1958, it's got two transistors on it. You can see it there, those like rectangular things, and they're interconnected, so it's an IC. In 1971, Intel put out its first commercial product. It had 2,300 transistors, about $1 per transistor, 740 kilohertz frequency. And then a couple years ago, here's the NVIDIA GPU, graphical processor unit, that's 7.1 billion transistors at, you know, 0.0000001. And that's what's driving all this. The fact that you have so much capability so cheaply that empowers so many different technologies. So it's a 100-billion-fold improvement since 1971. Pretty extraordinary. And we're seeing this, and I just want to point out, we don't notice it. We take it for granted. And that's extraordinary. I want you to take a second with me to notice this. Let me give an example. Here's the first digital camera ever, 1976. Steve Sesson comes up with it inside Kodak, brings it into the boardroom of Kodak and says, here it is, the future of Kodak. And of course, Kodak ignores it, because they don't realize what business they're truly in. They think they're in the paper and chemicals business, while they're really in the memory business, in the photography business. And so today, the digital camera, right, is not 0.01 megapixels. It's 10 megapixels. It's 10 bucks. It's 1,000 times better resolution, 1,000 times cheaper, 1,000 times, you know, a billion-fold improvement. And because Kodak missed it, they went bankrupt. But here's the point. This is where it is today. If you expect it's going to stay here and don't project where it's going to be, you're missing the point. Where is it going to be when 10 years from now it's 1,000 times better than this? And 20 years, 1,000,000 times better. And 30 years, 1,000,000,000 times better. I mean, it's going to be insect eyes, right? It's going to be in our clothing. It's going to be floating through the air in micro drones. It's going to be everywhere. And as a marketer, you're going to be able to ask a question, how many people in Manhattan at 5th and Madison are wearing blue shirts right now? And know that answer. I mean, the notion that you're going to be able to know anything you want, anytime you want, is what's happening with this global sensor explosion. And so I think about the fact that this is where it is today, and you have to stretch your imaginations to imagine where is it going to be a decade from now. And build your businesses with a projection. I remember meeting the founders of Siri, who said, you know, when we got together to found Siri, the technology didn't exist for it. We had to project where it was going to be 3 years from now in terms of bandwidth, computational power, and build for that. So as you know, the first learning here is as you are building your businesses, you need to project where's technology going to be as a facilitator for you 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. Because if you deliver a product based on what it's today, you're out of business or you missed the boat. Right? Does that make sense? It's skating to the puck, and I'm not a good sports analogy guy, but I think that's correct. This is the first inertial measurement unit that took us to the moon. 50 pounds, millions of dollars. Here it is today, under a buck, a chip on your phone. This is what makes drones possible. Where's it going to be in the future? It's going to be, you know, molecular in size. It's going to be in the clothing. It's going to be in every device. It's going to have accelerations and velocity and state vectors information. So when you pick up your fork, it's going to tell you how fast you're eating your food. This is the first GPS unit, $120,000, 53 pounds. Imagine this on the dashboard of your SUV. Here it is today, right? You can barely pick it up because it's too small, $5. So where is this going to be? So just think about the technologies you have today and project them forward, because you know what we think about in science fiction is in fact happening. And again, I want to. This is where it is today. It doesn't stop here. It isn't like, we're not like, aha, we've achieved it, we've arrived. No, it continues a billionfold better than that. So when I think about this, Dan encouraged me. I'm just, again, so grateful to Dan Sullivan and Strategic Coach for all of his support and mentorship. You know, as I teach this, I teach about the six Ds of where exponential technology is going. And this is a framework for you to think about your business and technology. The first is that anything that becomes digitized becomes digital, and everything's becoming digitized. Manufacturing, health, obviously everything that we do in this room here. It enters a period of deceptive growth, because in the beginning of exponential growth, 0.01 megapixel cameras, 0.02, 0.04, 0.0, it's a slow growth phase, and it becomes disruptive. Then it drives three things that's rocking our world right now: dematerialization, demonetization, and democratization. Dematerialization means that today all of these things, these to be physical objects, have dematerialized into your phone. So I ask CEOs all the time, which of your products or services are going to dematerialize? Because once they do, they demonetize, right? Uber's demonetized the taxi fleets. Skype long distance, Amazon the bookstores, Google research, Airbnb hotel chains, Craigslist has decimated the newspapers. It's taken the money out of these, put them back in the consumer pockets. So you have to be clear, are you demonetizing an industry or are you being demonetized? Because I would posit to you that everything can be demonetized and dematerialized in one form or another. And then when that happens, it democratizes, right? 1 billion handsets in Africa by 2016. You can come up with a concept and have 1 billion users in Africa. I mean, you had to have been Coca-Cola with arms and legs in every country around the world to have that kind of a reach. Today, you're a kid in a dorm room. That's the exciting world we're living in. So, four critical insights. The first is that the only constant is change, and the rate of change is increasing. Are you with me there? And you can't relax, or you can't sit back. You can. I mean, it's up to you. We're living in a world where, you know, abundance is coming, but if you want to keep on top of it. The second is, you either disrupt your own company or someone else will. Standing still equals death. And this is what scares the shit out of Fortune 500 CEOs. And they pay me to scare them. But this is what should be exciting to you, because when you see a great profit margin in a large company, your opportunity is to go and figure out, how do I disrupt them? Because they cannot move as fast as you can. Third insight is, your competition, and this is mostly to large corporations, is no longer the multinational overseas. It's the guy or gal in the garage. And the interesting thing is that it's not the one or two guys or gals in the garage. It's millions of them in Mumbai, in Singapore, in San Jose. The number of entrepreneurs is exploding into the world. And then finally, your mindset matters a lot. So the question is, what's yours? So I want to talk in the second part now about a bold and abundant mindset. And I want to start that with a video. My goal here is for you to up your game. My goal here is for you to think at a level that's uncomfortable. My goal is to have you think at, as Dan and Joe would say, a 10x level or a 100x level. How are you going to touch a billion people on this planet? How are you going to take on the world's biggest problems and solve them? So let's watch this video and then come back.
The actual moonshot is wonderful, inspirational, poetic, beautiful, involved great technical challenges, genuine heroism. It brought the world together. But think about the Polynesian islander on the dugout canoe, deciding one day they were going to go that way. No one had ever been that way before. No one even knew if there was anything that way before. It was amazing, and it changed the world.
People can set their minds to magical, seemingly impossible ideas, and then through science and technology, bring them to reality. And that then sets other people on fire, that other things that look impossible might be accomplishable.
Galileo is such a hero, you know, in thinking big. And what he represents to me is both curiosity and wonder that humanity had, that he had, that pushed him and drove himself to invent and work on the first telescopes that allowed us to see the moon, and here we are.
These aviation pioneers were figuring it out as they went. No one really knew how to build an airplane, right? No one knew how to fly an airplane. It was amazing and crazy and wonderful, and they wanted to explore.
Many years ago, the great British explorer George Mallory, who was to die on Mount Everest, was asked, why did he want to climb it? He said, because it is there.
There's so many challenges in the world, and you can feel daunted by that, you know, and sort of oppressed by that, or you kind of say, how might we think differently about this?
Everyone else in the world is working on the next 10%. If you can be the one that delivers that 10 times improvement, you have a chance to really change things.
If you want cars to run at 50 miles per gallon, fine, you can retool your car a little bit. But if I tell you it has to run on a gallon of gas for 500 miles, you have to start over.
You need a lot of courage in this work, and you need a lot of persistence. One of the things that's really critical is not only having the courage to keep trying every day or thinking big, even if you don't really 100% believe it's possible, like you might think this might be possible, have the courage to try. That's how the greatest things have happened.
You don't spend your time being bothered that you can't teleport from here to Japan, because there's a part of you that thinks it's impossible. Moonshot thinking is choosing to be bothered by that.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Humanity's progress has been a series of amazing, audacious things, from the very small and personal up to the great, big, and grand, and we are a species of moonshots, and to me, that's like the really amazing, poetic, and inspirational thing.
I think our ambitions are a glass ceiling on what we can accomplish.
When you find your passion, you're unstoppable. You can make amazing things happen. It's been true through all of history.
I believe in the human spirit, and I believe that there are always going to be crazy people who will get out of bed one morning and say, you know what? I think I can build a space elevator, and we'll just go and do it. But I think that if we become afraid to take these great big risks, we stop inspiring people. We stop achieving things. And the biggest nightmare scenario is that we won't have what it takes to solve the really big challenges.
When Kennedy said that we would put a man on the moon, it's about the fact that he said, we don't know how to do this yet, and we're going to do it anyway. And that sends chills up everybody's spine. Because if that happens, what couldn't we do?
Yeah, it's great, huh? So the guy speaking in that video is a good friend, Astro Teller. He's the head of Google X. And I interviewed him at length for my next book, Bold, and talk about the fact that we're living in a world where you can take moonshots. And his ethos is so true that when you're trying to go 10% bigger, you're competing with everybody else trying to go 10% bigger. When you go 10x bigger, when you have the audacity to say that and try that, it inspires an amazing group of people to come by your side. And no one's competing with you there. And the question is it really 100-fold harder? And the chances are that it's not. So I also, in Bold, really drill down into what the 8 innovation principles are that Google uses and then with Stephen, look at how Lockheed Skunk Works maps onto that. So, you know, what are the most extraordinary companies and mindsets, and how do they work? So let me share with you these eight principles. The first is focus on the user. Google's issue, and you'll see this again and again, is focus on the user. What does the user need? Pretty obvious, pretty direct. The second is open will win. You know, I bet on Android over iOS for that one reason. Open will win. The ability for having billions of people to contribute to you, instead of thinking that, oh, my 10,000 employees are the best and brightest in the world, you know, there's no competition there. The second is ideas can come from everywhere or anywhere. And the whole notion of crowdsourcing, right? We talk about that at Abundance 360. We talk about that at XPRIZE, at HeroX. It's the fact that you can crowdsource solutions from around the world to solve your problems. Think big, start small. So at Singularity University, I constantly teach the students, start with a product that has the ability to earn a dollar on day one, but can impact a billion people in a decade. That's the, you know, think big, start small. Never fail to fail. This is where big companies screw up, where they don't take risks, and you guys know that as entrepreneurs, never fail to fail. The rapid experimentation, launch early and iterate. My friend who's the CEO, Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn, says, you know, if you're not embarrassed by your first product release, you've launched too late. And I believe that. When you look for striving for perfection, you miss the whole benefit of this hyper-connected world today. Be a platform, float all boats. And then finally, make it matter. Make it matter. Oh my God, make it matter. So in bold, I talk about a concept that my good friend Salim Ismail coined, which is having a massively transformative purpose, an MTP. Do you have, for yourself and for your company, a massively transformative purpose that matters, that's going to attract people to work for you? Right? At XPRIZE, it's making the impossible possible, or, you know, solving the world's grand challenges. So here's the eight. We'll talk about these a little bit more. My question for you is, what, you know, is the area of your business where you should be going 10 times bigger rather than going 10% bigger? So I want you to reflect on that and think about that. Don't have time to do a session now, but ask yourself that question, please. So here's one of the first moonshot organizations, one of the first bold thinkers out there is Kelly Johnson, who in 1943 is called by the Defense Department and says, we're losing the war against Nazi Germany, and we need a jet plane. Never had a jet plane before. In 143 days, these guys did not design a jet plane. They delivered working hardware. You can't negotiate a contract in 143 days today. They also delivered the U-2, the SR-71. So the question is, how did they do this? And so in bold, I actually looked at how Lockheed Skunk Works did this, compared this against Google X, and came up with some shared elements. And here they are. The first is having a compelling purpose or mission, an MTP that is uniquely yours. Google's is, you know, to categorize the world's information, right? And if someone else came up with that MTP, they say, no, that's Google's. So something uniquely that's yours that attracts the world's top people to come and work for you. The second that Kelly Johnson and Google X share is small teams, a passion around small teams. And this is the words from Kelly Johnson. The number of people connected to any project should be restricted in an almost vicious manner. This is Jeff Bezos' two pizza rule, right? Teams under 10, ideally 5 or 6. Extreme isolation. Access by outsiders to the project and its personnel must be strictly controlled. Because if you're trying to innovate inside your organization of even 100 people, let alone 5,000 people, and you're trying to do something that's disrupting your company, the entire immune organization is going to come out to you and say, that's a crazy idea, can't be done. If you do it, you can put us out of business. What are you doing? Come on, stop it. And so actually taking your that Skunk Works inside your group and isolating it, right? It's Steve Jobs taking his Mac team to a different building with a pirate flag above. So how do you isolate your team? Authority and autonomy. The manager must have control of his program, create mutual trust and very close cooperation on a day-to-day basis. It's the notion that my team at PhD Ventures, Abundance 360, it's a team of five. It's like they're a self-managed company. They have the authority and the autonomy to go and run on their own. And I learned that from a strategic coach, of course. It's all good things. Flexibility. You must provide a very flexible drawing. So when they designed the fighter jets and the U-2 and the SR-71, there was a drawing in the middle of the room where anybody could go and change the drawing. There was no sort of organizational hierarchy. I need to get this person's permission. You could go and change the drawing of that airplane. And so it provided immense flexibility, but also responsibility. Lives were at stake if you screwed up. But it allowed rapid iteration like never before. And then finally, testing and experimentation. You know, fail often, fail early, test, test, test. The next part of the book, I actually had a chance to sit down at length with a number of amazing people, Larry Page, Elon, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, studied their work, and came up with a series of eight, I'll share six, thinking at scale strategies. Passion and purpose. You know, Elon said, I didn't go and build a car company and a rocket company to make money. I'm not crazy. It was like driven by my passion. Thinking at scale and experimentation, Jeff Bezos saying, you know, you need to have thick skin. If you're not failing often, if you're not experimenting on a monthly or daily basis, you're not going to innovate. Larry Page saying, you know, we need to be, you know, customer-centric. We need to be doing stuff and touching stuff that people use every day. Richard Branson saying, you know, we need to have risk mitigation. And again, you guys will get copies of my book, but, you know, specifically, you know, entrepreneurs are ones who take risk but set it off to someone else. Long-term thinking. Jeff Bezos with Amazon is a perfect example of long-term thinking. And then finally, you know, optimistic thinking, and Larry gives me credit on abundance often, but it's, you know, it's we have a reason to be tremendously optimistic in the world today. And having that mindset inside your organization and your company and your family and your life changes how you think about the future. So three key questions here. Jot these down and think about this later. Where are you thinking local and linear where you should be thinking global and exponential? Which of your products and services might become dematerialized or demonetized? And where inside your company are you taking moonshots? So, you know, I can talk about this for 2 days straight, and I do at Abundance 360, so I've got 45 minutes to wrap up, and I've got just another 10 to close this out. But what I'd like to do with you is to share with you the four moonshots I'm taking. And I want to share this as inspiration, if you would, for encouraging you guys to take moonshots. Because we're living in a world where you can aim big. And many of you are. I don't want to diminish the fact that you are, but I want to encourage you to think as big as you can. So the first moonshot is to eradicate illiteracy on this planet. And you know that I'm very proud to be the CEO and chairman of the XPRIZE Foundation. I have my XPRIZE team. Where are you guys, by the way? Can you raise your hand? There, we have my XPRIZE team here and down over there. And our next big XPRIZE that we're launching on September 22nd is called the Global Learning XPRIZE. And it's perhaps the most important thing that we've ever done. It is an XPRIZE to help 1 billion people on the planet learn how to read, write, and do math. Nothing less than that. There are 1 billion illiterate people. A couple hundred million of those are kids, and they live in places where they will never have a teacher or have a school. Just can't scale humans or schools that quickly. So what we've done is that we have built out an XPRIZE, and It's an XPRIZE that is going to be asking teams around the world to build a piece of software that can operate on any tablet or cell phone. They can take a child where there's nothing, no teachers, no schools, nothing, and take them from illiteracy to reading, writing, and numeracy in 18 months. This is a piece of software that will go open source and be put on every Android tablet and device out there. So we're getting ready to launch this at the end of September. It's a $15 million prize. It is funded by a set of rock stars. And we're going to be joining onto this an Indiegogo campaign. And one of the things I would love is help from this community to make this thing go as big and as bold as possible. And I don't have time to show the video right now, but we're at lunch today. XPRIZE is sponsoring the lunch. I'll talk more about this. But if this is something that you're passionate about, like creating literacy, which uplifts humanity, makes us a more peaceful world, of helping teach 100 million kids on a scalable fashion how to read and write and do numeracy and unlock innovation for them, if this is something that you as a superhero community of marketers are willing to help us promote globally, we'd love your help. And if it's something you're interested in, just to get a sense, can I get a show of hands who would like to be part of this campaign for us? Just raise your hand if you could. Keep them up there. Keep them up there. Okay. And at lunch, I'm going to be following up with you guys. It's quick name capture. I've got an AI that's now tracking every name and every face and sending you an email in about 30 seconds now. But I'm very proud. We have Jono on our team ran the largest crowdfunding campaign ever for Ubuntu. They set a $30 million goal. Jono, you hit how much of that goal? 12.7 million. They didn't take it down. But we're hoping to really do that. Our goal is not the money. Our goal is 100,000 people supporting this to become one of the most massive events on the planet and transforming the planet. So the next moonshot I've taken is called Human Longevity, Inc. I'm going to be talking about this at Abundance 360 this year. It's crazy. We did an $85 million seed round in 3 months. This is a company. My goal is to add 30 to 40 healthy years on your lives. Our mission is to make 100 years old and you 60. My co-founder and now taking on the role of CEO is Craig Venter, who created the human genome, created the first synthetic life form, and then Bob Hariri, who's the top stem cell scientist on the planet. And we're creating the largest database ever. We're going to be 1 million people in the next 5 years, phenotype data. They're a full human genome, the 3 billion from your parents, 3 billion from your mom and your dad each. The microbiome, sequencing your entire microbiome, full body MRIs, your metabolome, the 2,400 chemicals in your bloodstream, and then finally your proteome. And all of this data is being collected, and we just hired away from Google Franz Ock, who is the top machine learning person who did Google Translate and is going to be basically taking this data and coming up with what we believe is going to be transformational innovations in human health. So what's life like for you if you get to live an extra 30 or 40 years? Or 100 years old is, you're going strong. The third moonshot I'm working on right now is prospecting near-Earth asteroids. So these rocks hit the Earth once in a while. That's not a good thing. There's 60 million of them in the solar system. About 1.5 million are a kilometer in size. About 1,000 of those come close to the Earth. And there are a set of them that are on Manhattan Islands, the most valuable rocks in the solar system. And there are 11 of those. And our goal is to go out there and to prospect those, lay claim, and extract resources. What resources? Fuel and platinum group metals. By the way, this is an example of one of those rocks. It comes by the Earth every 2 years, and about a half a kilometer by a kilometer, and it's worth about $5 trillion. These are the spacecraft that we're building right now. We have a lab and a team of 40 engineers up in Seattle, and this is the spacecraft. This is our picks and shovels. AI on board, laser comm back to the Earth, and for scale, that's how big it is. And that's Chris Slowicki, our president, with Larry Page, our first investor. And these devices are, instead of $600 million, they're $1 million each, 600 times cheaper than they would have been at JPL. Chris ran the last three Mars missions at JPL before we stole them away. So getting access to abundant resources wasn't possible. It is now possible. My final mission is creating a world of abundance. It's what I care about most. And with that, for me, it's been about creating a community of people. Many of you are part of that community, the Abundance 360 community, and I believe that we can, in fact, create extraordinary wealth while creating a world of abundance. And in fact, the two go very much together. And so for me, it's about making my 25-year commitment to that. And I announced that last year with Dan. And thank you for the inspiration, Dan. And then bold is the how-to manual. So I want to wrap by saying, guys, we're living in a world where anything is possible. Your mindset is the most important asset you have. Don't restrict yourself. Go big, go bold. The world is there for you to create your visions of the future. We're living in a world where science fiction is now science fact. Thank you all very much.